Hello and welcome along to the RTE Rugby Podcast, coming to you from Brisbane, Queensland this week. Delighted to say we're bringing you coverage on the ground in Australia across the next 2.5 weeks of the British and Irish Lions Tour. I'm in Brisbane. I'm joined by Johnny Holland and Johnny Murphy this week, who are back at home. Guys, it's Thursday evening in Brisbane, around 7:30 local time at the time of recording. There was talk of a lot of the other journalists about potentially heading to watch a bit of NRL tonight at Suncorp Stadium. The Dolphins and the North Queensland Cowboys are playing at 8 o'clock, but I've politely declined because I'm a true pro and I couldn't I couldn't pass on a podcast with you lot. But it is interesting. My main takeaway after a day or two in here, you know, it's just about how Australian rugby are really, really fighting for space around the place. That game, that NRL game tonight in Queensland is a Queensland derby. It's two teams from pretty much around Brisbane up against each other. That's what was on the back pages when I went and had a look in a couple of shops this morning. The Lions jerseys are everywhere. The Lions supporters have come in enormous numbers so far, to the extent that I'm wondering how much they'll outnumber the Australian support on Saturday. If Australia don't get a win against the Lions this weekend, or at the very least don't put up a massive show, this tour has the potential to kind of peter out, certainly in Australia. Maybe it'll take off in Ireland and in England and Scotland and Wales, but certainly from an Australian perspective, there definitely feels like there's an element of fear around how this tour could peter out if this weekend doesn't go their way.
Yeah, I think we struggle here with multi-sports like the GAA. Like Limerick in the last couple of years with their success, there's words, you know, of Cork win this weekend, which we hope they do. Like, you know, there'll be taking athletes from here and there, and it's all kind of nonsense talk, really. But you look at Australia with the AFL and with Rugby League, Union really suffers. Like, there's pro games competing with pro games. Like, there's a massive pool of athletes. It's actually fascinating when you look at, you know, the athletes that they can put on any one pitch, but they really do struggle, and Rugby Union is struggling. But I think, you know, I've thought about that, like a 3-0 whitewash, like it wouldn't be good for anyone for the series. But then again, you've got Joe Schmidt on the other side, and he's a tactician. If anyone can, you know, I think even the fact that they haven't played much rugby, like nothing that you can watch, they played Fiji, and maybe it looked like a kind of a slow start, but then Fiji got results elsewhere against Scotland and things like that. Maybe it just isn't a true reflection. And then there's also not a whole lot to look at. So they're looking at the Lions morning and night, although their selections have been different. They can probably come up with some sort of plan, knowing what Andy Farrell does, etc. But what can you really plan for against Australia? You don't really know what they're going to do. So the first one could be, I hope it's a bit of a stalemate in the good sense that it's a competition. I hope it's not just, you know, I think was the last time it was 41-16 or something in the first test. I saw that this morning. A good reminder. I hope it's not that, put it that way.
No, it was the third test, 41-16. Do you remember the first test in 2013? Yeah. That was Kirtley Beale slipping with that kick. Last play of the game to potentially win it, which, you know, I mean,
that's what you want. You need a close one, though.
Desperately. And Joe Schmidt talked about it as well. Johnny Murphy, I'll direct this one to you. Joe Schmidt spoke about that today as well. He was asked about the fact that the Lions support, there's going to be a lot more red probably than gold in the crowd this weekend, and he made the point obviously that there's a kind of a chicken and egg thing with. Are the players feeding off the supporter, or are the supporters feeding off the players and the efforts and the results the players have got? And he obviously admitted that, you know, the team, they haven't really earned the support of the Wallabies fans or the general Australian public over the last couple of years. This is a huge opportunity for Australian rugby financially, and they're going to make an absolute bomb off this over the next couple of years, which will sustain them after some tough years. But if they can get this right, Australia, there's an enormous opportunity here for them.
Yeah, massively. And I think Johnny's already said it, that, you know, Joe Smith being the tactician he is, it gives them a really good chance to really have a tight, close series. You look at their team, and you speak of the kind of range of athletes that they have in Australia. And when you look at the teams over the number of years, what they can do in an aerial battle, what they can do from a power and speed perspective. They literally can pull athletes from all over the place, and they're such a sporting nation, but they're a sporting nation that needs success, because you look at You know, they're probably as bad, if not worse, in terms of, you know, when you compare it to the English media, when things aren't going right, they really do. They want success. They're viewed as a sporting leader worldwide in all sports, be it from strength and conditioning to, you know, you look at the amount of strength and conditioners they have in the professional game, across all professional sports. You know, they really are a massive sporting nation, but it's about success and it's about winning. And I think that for this series for them comes at a pivotal moment in terms of how disappointing they were at the last World Cup, to really build on something over the next 2 years that can hopefully give them a bit of success. Obviously not too much from our perspective, but I do think that the Aussies in general, they're such a sporting nation, but they're a sporting nation that needs success in whatever they are doing.
Yeah, and the team news is in, so as of today. We'll start with the forward pack. Ellis Genge got the better of Andrew Porter to start at loose head prop. Dan Sheehan and Tadhg Furlong both start as expected. That's among eight Irish players in the starting team and a further three on the bench. So I believe that's a record, eight Irish players beating the seven that started the second test against South Africa back in 2009. So the rest of the team, Joe McCarthy, rewarded for his good form alongside Mauro Itoje in the second row. Tadhg Byrne and Tom Curry start at flanker. They are probably two of the names and two of the positions worth discussing a little bit more. Jack Conan in between them at number eight, as expected. Also as expected, Jameson Gibson-Park and Finn Russell in the halfbacks. No surprises there. Hugh Jones and Sione Tuipulotu in the centre. So that's an all-Scottish 10-12 combination across midfield for the Lions. Tommy Freeman and James Lowe on the wings. No surprises there. And Blair Kinghorn is still injured, so Hugo Keenan gets the nod at full back. And on the bench then, Ronan Kelleher, Andrew Porter and Will Stewart in the front row. Ollie Chesham will cover second row and back row potentially as well. Ben Earl getting the nod ahead of the likes of Josh van der Fleer, Jack Morgan and Henry Pollock also. And then the backline replacements, Alex Mitchell, Bundiaki and Marcus Smith, who is chosen ahead of Owen Farrell. For the Wallabies then, it's four changes for them from their defeat or from their win against Fiji a couple of weeks ago. Two big losses. Neither of these players played against Fiji, but they're still out injured. That's Rob Valentini and also Will Skelton, I should say.
Will Skelton, yeah.
Will Skelton misses out. So their side is as follows: James Slipper, Matt Fassler, and Alan Alalatoa in the front row. Nick Frost and Jeremy Williams in the second row. Harry Wilson captaining at number eight, and Fraser McRae, and a debut in the back row for Nick Champion, the Crespigny of Western Force as well. Jake Gordon and Tom Lynagh. Tom Lynagh, son of former Wallabies great Michael Lynagh. He starts for the first time for the Wallabies in a test match, just 22 years old. He's earned three caps, all of those off the bench. It's going to be his first start for the Wallabies at out half this weekend. Tom Wright at fullback, Max Jorgensen and Harry Potter on the wings with Joseph Akuso-Suali and Len Ikitau in the centres. Guys, we'll look at the lines and some of the big calls there. The two choices at flanker are the ones that jump out. I'm going to start with Tadhg Byrne because Johnny Holland, I might go to you first. Just over a week ago, when Ollie Chesham got the nod for that game against the Brumbies and had an excellent match, you were starting to get a little, I don't know, well, sorry, maybe I'm putting words in your mouth. I was starting to get a little bit worried for Tadhg Byrne's chances of making the team, but some of the things that Andy Farrell referred to in his press conference this afternoon makes you realise, God, he was always going to pick a player like Tadhg Byrne. One of those pure test match animals who's done it time and time again for him in an Ireland shirt. I think during the Lions tour, we can forget about all the credit in the bank over previous years a little bit easily, can we?
Yeah, I think the first thing when if you were Andy Farrell picking this team, you could, like, there's so many ways to skin a cat. You could pick so many teams that can actually beat Australia, and it's just it depends on how they're setting up the balance that he feels is in there. But I do understand, like, you know, there's a lot of people giving out about form, and for me, Tadhg Byrne has probably given away more penalties than I don't know the stats, but it seems like he's given away more than many. And I do think that's an element of maybe trying to grasp the game, which is what he does with Munster a lot, you know. So he's probably in that mold of trying to do a lot of things when he doesn't need to do that in a Lions shirt, possibly. But At the same time, that back five can be picked so many different ways, and then when you put Joe McCarthy into it, all of a sudden it might start changing how you select others. So the way I looked at it was, I told you his captain, he's always going to be in there. And Tadhg Byrne is like, if you had a leadership group, I don't know if they do, he'd be in it. So he's probably going to be selected. And then you pick the others around him. That's how I was thinking about it originally. And then when you look at Joe McCarthy, like, is he a five and a half? Is he a real five? I'm not sure. Tadhg Byrne is probably a five and a half. Do these numbers exist? Can you put those numbers on the jersey? But you're not really picking numbers, I don't think, because Tom Curry, for me, isn't the same seven as Jack Morgan or Van der Fleer. He's maybe
No.
six and a half, you know? So, like, it's not a traditional, you know, selection the way people want numbers on backs to reflect the position. I think there's, you know, Andy Farrell's brain is working differently to us over here. Like, that's, you know, it's just not like for like with those numbers. There's a balance in his pack that he's going for, and that's most likely what's dictating his decisions. But when you look at Joe McCarthy's set piece as well, I don't like the negative slant on this, but I think it's a bit sloppy, you know. When you're looking with Leinster and Ireland, it just looks like he misses a lift, or he's not at the top of his jump, or whatever it is. So Tadhg Byrne is the lineout option there. And then when you're picking your bench, Chesham is probably going to take that slot as well if anything goes wrong. So, like, it's interesting how he's picked it, and I'd have serious sympathy for Jack Morgan. I think he's been unbelievable. If you're picking Tadhg Byrne for his leadership, which I think he is, Jack Morgan has to be picked on his leadership as well. And at the same time, Josh van der Fleer is still hard done by. So imagine picking that back row for. And I did say as well, it's just not going to be the same team for the three tests. No matter what way you do it, there's going to be knocks, bangs, and bruises, and someone's going to move out. So, you know, they're going to get their chance probably. But how he's picked the first one is very, very interesting. I thought Tom Curry in the Argentina game, when Andy Farrell was talking about reaction to errors and stuff, I thought Tom Curry had some poor moments like that. So I was surprised that he kind of stuck with him like that. But, at the same time, look, there's a serious balance across that back five. Like, that's going to beat the life out of Australia, in my opinion, in any regard. So, you know, he could probably swap a few numbers and not lose any sleep over it.
Is there a sense if go ahead, Johnny?
I kind of thought that was always going to be the main talking point in selection in terms of the quality that they have in the second row and back row. Particularly, you know, eight was probably always kind of fairly nailed on, given Conan is probably the only out and out eight that they have. And then it was going to be the balance, as Johnny's already in the second rows, who partners Itoje. They had to have that line out option at six, in my opinion, just to in terms of how they wanted to launch. So even if Byrne was in a second row, they're probably going to have Chesham at six. But again, I think it just having those line out operators allows their kind of, you know, their sevens be what they want them to be in terms of that, you know, those that nuisance at the breakdown, and that's what, you know, that's what, you know, Van der Freer, Morgan, Curry, what they, you know, what they give you in terms of that, you know, for Morgan, given his how good he's been over the last 3 weeks, for him not to even be in the 2023 feels like a really, like, it's not harsh, it's just the competition. It just shows you how good they are. But I do think that, you know, Byrne is probably, as you've already said, a credit in the bank. This and he'll need to perform this weekend. But of all the positions, you can kind of understand everything else as we go through, even the makeup of the bench and everything. You can kind of get a, you know, understand where they are with the injuries and all that, but the lack of kind of knocks in that kind of five, six, seven space is what was always going to be the main talking point around selection. You know, no issue with Genge. I think he's been class, his ball carrying around the park, what he's given, he's you know, from day one. But yeah, it was always going to be that five, six, seven that were always going to be the talking points. And everyone has the, you know, everyone has, you know, played well enough to be starting. So you're going to be talking about a number of different people in that position. So, but yeah, I think it's interesting to see the makeup of the back row, given that line out option that they needed there, and what Curry brings to them in terms of that nuisance at the breakdown. So it's just, you know, where you go for Josh van der Fleer, who probably has a bit more link in his game in terms of that those wider channels. And then McCarthy, given that kind of size that they probably don't have around, you know, beside the Itoje, kind of shows kind of what they're potentially in terms of what they're looking to do defensively. front up, be really aggressive in that space, and then obviously kind of quite close to the ball, potentially an attack before they kind of move up when they bring the guys off the bench, you know.
It's funny that you know, when you don't pick Jack Morgan or Van de Vleer, when you go to 5-3 bench, it's actually just hard to slot them in. You might feel like they're somewhere, but now that that's the makeup, they don't really go in there. It's funny when you can start or not pick a guy, you know, and that's, I think, we're really close to starting, and then all of a sudden they're still not in the squad because Ben Earl will literally cover 6, 7, and 8, won't he? And probably not 6 because of Chesham, but like if stranger things happened, he might still be covering 6, you know. So
yeah,
whole back row, Chesham can cover that 5 and 6 role, you know. They just have a better balance there once they've only got 2 kind of back 5 on the bench.
The mad thing is, like, if you're looking from Morgan or Van der Fleer's point of view, they are so loaded in that position. And as you mentioned, Johnny, the fact that Ben Earl is covering all 3 of those positions, so you're realistically, you're going to find it really, really difficult to be making it onto a replacement's bench unless they go 6-2. For one of Jack Morgan or Josh Van der Fleer, like, they might need 2 injuries to break into a Lions team, let alone 1. And that is the shocking reality about just how loaded they are in that one position.
Yeah, and then you look at, if say something was to happen to Earl, you'd probably put Pollock on the bench in terms of his versatility and what he'd give you in terms of if it was a like for like, you know. So you're not even, as Johnny said, it's starter, you're not involved. And that's kind of when you get to, when we start talking about Owen Farrell, the makeup and the injuries have kind of pushed him out of that bench spot because of, you know, Hanson, Kinghorn and Ringrose and the injuries to those guys. That, you know, if Hanson was probably available, you'd probably have Hanson and Farrell on the bench just because of what they give you in the verse and how they cover all, absolutely every single option there, regardless of what centres they have. But yeah, it's really hard. It's really tough. I'm not going to say it's harsh because they're in a, you know, they're so loaded there. It's just a really tough call on Josh Van der Veer and Morgan. I think Morgan in particular is the one that, you know, you think has really, really stood up over the last, and on form, I was expecting him to get that 7 spot. But it's just hard.
But it's probably the most specialised position on the pitch. It doesn't have a guaranteed spot. You can just go without them. You know, like, as hookers, like, you know, if you're third choice hooker, you'd probably play a test, you know, because of the attritional nature of it. Out halves will be picked, 9s will be picked. You have to bring 2 9s, you know, this kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. But at the 7, you might not even be picked. It's mad. Maybe fullback comes into that conversation small because you can cover it a bit. Mm-hmm. But as an out and out 7 like that, being picked or not selected at all is mental. Like,
Speaking to 2 coaches here, purely hypothetically, if I was to offer you the full footage, completely unedited, of that final selection meeting between Andy Farrell and his coaches, can I get you to put a financial number on what you would be willing to pay to get your hands on it?
It's interesting.
I'd say it'll be priced. Yeah, it'll be really cool to be flying them all, wouldn't it? Like.
Would you fork out 4 figures for it? Go above €1,000?
Yeah,
it's fork out Johnny's money, €1,000 easily. I do think people think that you know, that it was just a unanimous decision, and this is what the Lions coach is going for. They could have a complete split, and Andy Farrell has the final say. You know, because we've certainly had it in the past where coaches say, I'm not really sure, I think this fella deserves all the 50-50 calls aren't unanimous. Like, there's going to be it's going to be coaches thinking that he's wrong, but it's ultimately his job to make the call. He's in the hot seat where he gets to decide ultimately, and he's going to take the flak if it doesn't go right too.
Yeah, and I think there's probably a situation where there's, you have those conversations on a probably Sunday, you have another conversation on Monday night, you're going to probably name the team to the players on the Tuesday, but I would say it's probably a final meeting on Tuesday morning after 2 nights of sleep thinking about it. And ultimately, as Johnny said, any selection comes down to the head coach, and it comes down to a gut feel and a matter of opinion and perception of what they need for this week and how they're going to get, you know, the first one on the door. And then no doubt with the coaching staff he has, that once that decision is made, you move on and you get on with it, you know. So and I think also the guys like Van der Flier, Morgan, how they would have trained this week would have been very, very important. And you talk about, a lot of it has popped up about Dricko when he got dropped, and a lot of guys were saying, you know, how he trained that week, particularly some of the Welsh guys like Adam Jones and those guys. They were saying like they've never seen anyone who was dropped train as well, that actually really contributed to the, you know, to the victory on Saturday for someone who wasn't involved. And I think that they seem to, and Andy Farrell gets that out of his players all the time. So it's how those guys would have trained and reacted to that is actually going to probably cement the performance even more.
Yeah, and Andy Farrell made a point of actually calling out a lot of those players. He didn't name any names, but he did say that probably the most pleasing element of the week is the way those players have reacted to not so much not making a 20, not so much not making the starting lineup, but those who didn't make the 23, the guys who've been running around in training all week wearing gold bibs, pretending to be Australian players and kind of filling those roles. And as he kind of said, a lot of those players probably knew the writing was on the wall from earlier in the week when they were wearing the bibs, even before they were told the team. You know, they can read the tea leaves as well as anyone, but I suppose having the mental fortitude to stick at it and not sulk and not get into a huff and crack on with it is...
It's different in Test 1, though, isn't it? Because you want to be fairly short-sighted to throw the ties out of the brand.
Yeah.
That's to go on such a nutritional Test match. You know, doing it in the third Test is a different level altogether, I think, of respect. But, yeah, you want to be short-sighted now to get the hump on week one of the Tests.
Yeah.
I might pick out a couple more players here just off the top of the team. I do want to mention Tadhg Furlong, actually, because I think coming into this series, he probably had quite a few doubters. I'll put my hand up and say I was one of them around his ability to play several matches over a tour, the lingering calf and Achilles issues that have been at him for some time. But in the few games he's played in Australia and even in the Aviva as well against Argentina, he's looking right back to his best. He's starting this weekend, and it was a unanimous decision to start in the end. He was the clear front runner for the starting tight head jersey. This is his seventh test start for the Lions out of a possible seven. If he goes on and starts these next two, he is joining a pretty elite list of players who have started nine tests for the British and Irish Lions.
Yeah, it's unbelievable, really. And he's a real kind of manages to get himself fit at the right time and be in a position where he can perform. But fair play to him getting back to the level that he has over the last couple of weeks, given all the stuff that he's been through with his calf, with his Achilles. And he was a massive doubt for this tour, you know. And then when he was picked, people were, you know, he only has a certain amount of time to prove his fitness, and you know, is this someone that's going to have to get fit on tour? And to be fair, he has done, you know, and since he came back and he's played, he's been up to speed and he's getting better. But like he as a tight head, he gives you a point of difference because he can do everything you want. He can carry in close, he can use his footwork and get his hands free. He can throw those 10, 15, 20 meter passes. And particularly in the four-man shape that they've been using at attack, having him as a link at that two or three off their kickoffs, or when they're in their own kind of in behind their own 10 meter when they're setting up an exit, his ability to catch pass in those 15s really give them a big opportunity, particularly when the backs are swinging out the back. So yeah, but fair play to him, and it'd be great to see him do it.
The ceiling is so high, like it's higher. There wasn't, if he's fit, there's no competition, you know. So he's just tipping onto that side of being fit, and then you have to pick him, because you know, if Xander Ferguson went on tour, I don't know if he would have gotten it as easy. But and Bieleman surprised people. I actually thought watching with Short, I was like, this guy can move, actually. And you know, I thought he might cause a bit of hassle, but I'm not sure he really drove it home. And I think Tadhg Furlong swung it the other way. So like all of a sudden it became a non-decision. But if he was fit, and he is, it's a non-decision for any coach. I think he's that good.
Yeah, Stewart.
Yeah,
I think Stewart's a really good player. He's probably a bit underrated in the just because of the quality of Tadhg. But coming off the bench, you know, he's gonna dig down for 20-25 minutes. I think he's one of those guys, and probably from us, from you know, URC perspective, we don't get to see him week in, week out. But if you watch the Premiership, he's bang there like every single week. He's a high quality player. But as Johnny says, when Tadhg Furlong is fit, he's one of the best in the world.
Yeah, and you mentioned Will Stewart's footwork there, Johnny, as well. I'm remembering a clip of him against Wales in the Six Nations where he threw in an audacious sidestep on someone as well. So he's well able to move. Couple of other bits on the team itself. In the centres, Hugh Jones and Sione Tuipulotu. I suppose once we had it confirmed that Gary Ringrose was unavailable due to concussion for this game, Hugh Jones is automatically in there. It feels bad saying it, but did Gary Ringrose's concussion kind of almost automatically mean Bundiaki is missing out as well? I mean, if Gary Ringrose is fit and is starting, is Bundiaki starting alongside him?
I think so, but I think there was going to be a partnership. For whatever reason, it doesn't have to go that way, but I just think when you watch, like, there's a reason they're called Tuipulotu. Like, they're such a dynamic duo. Like, you know, I actually find it interesting. Most of their line breaks, Hugh Jones scoring under the sticks, comes from that 9, 12, 13 short, 10 at the back, and they use the front door. And there was one, I don't know, did he knock it on the ground? There was one clip where it was just how they moved together. Like, I just found it interesting. Pulotu went sideways and straightened, and I thought Jones was too close to him, but by the time Tuipulotu straightened, he was in the right gap. And I think that's the kind of instinct that they've had so much time together. You can't really teach that, you know, over the course of a Lions tour. Now, I wouldn't doubt Bundiaki with Hugh Jones as well. You're probably going to see it, you know, on the law of averages with contacts and stuff like that. You could see it. But I do think I've always thought Gary Ringrose is a Lions test starter. I've just, even from the last tour losing out, it's always something that I feel he was destined for. And there's an Irish tint on this, but like, you would like to think that he was going to be the starter, and then that brings Aki back into the mix. But Hugh Jones has been class. Like, he's been recovering from an injury as well, and all of a sudden, like, there's intercepts, he's breakaway tries, he's getting over the try line, which is, you know, you can say that they're from close range or from whatever they are, but you still have to do it, you know. So that partnership is really strong. But I actually think, you know, the like the halfbacks, it's just not a competition in terms of Lions versus Australia, but the centre partnership is going to be absolutely fascinating.
Yeah.
The Aussies are possibly the strongest.
Yeah, I think that, you know, Swali he's just class, you know, like he's on his day, and he can bang, he can, he's quick, like, he's everything you want. But that, there's fireworks going to happen in the centre, and that's going to be one of the areas that will be really important at the line, because when you go through it, as Johnny's already said, that's probably the one pairing that you potentially side with Australia on. And yeah, I'm really looking forward to that battle. But I think with an Irish thing, a lot of people have been talking about Hugh Jones and how good he is, and I think because we're so blessed with someone like Gary Ringrose, we kind of don't really pay attention to it. But we've seen firsthand over the last kind of couple of weeks how good he is, and I think that's going to be an absolute ding dong battle on Saturday. I'm looking forward to seeing that one as much as any other.
Yeah, and just even going back to, like, when Scotland beat the Wallabies back in November at Murrayfield, and you had Tuipulotu and Sua Ely going at each other earlier in that game. Like, I just can't wait for the two of them to come up against each other. Mm. You could see a nice early flashpoint to set the tone at Suncorp Stadium on Saturday. It was interesting. Tommy Freeman spoke to the media as well today, and I thought he had a very interesting line that kind of summed up the week around Lions selection. He kind of said, once you get the call, it's a weight off the shoulders. And then pretty instantly, you feel a new weight landing on your shoulders, which is the weight of, oh my, like, it's the reaction of, oh my God, I'm starting a Lions test this Saturday, followed by the reaction of, oh my God, I'm starting a Lions test on Saturday. It's, the pressure is coming on, and Australia have problems. We discussed that in the team news with Valentini and Skelton both out. It's all of the expectation now, Johnny, is sitting on the Lions. You had Henry Pollock earlier in the week talking about how they're gunning for 3-0, never mind a 2-1, and some of the Australian public have bitten on that line, which has just kind of ramped up the excitement a little bit more. There's pressure on the Lions, absolutely. But do you think they're capable of dealing with it?
They are capable of dealing with it, but I don't think anyone's going to thank Pollock for that. You can think it quietly if you want to, and maybe he does it on purpose because he loves to. He just and he's young, like, but he just hasn't stopped winding things up. So maybe he's done it on purpose. He loves the reaction, but now he doesn't have to go and deal with it. Someone else does. If you were a coach, you'd be like, ah.
But he'll probably have to deal with it next week in a midweek match. And I don't know, maybe the punishment you might get in a midweek match could be a lot worse than in a test.
But I think the funny, I'm a massive fan of Pollock, and I think he's going to deal with it regardless. Like, but you spoke with Tommy Freeman. I just he reminds me of George Norton the last Australian tour. Like, he could be that figure for the Lions. Like, with these kind of big moments, big physical but athletic moments as well. I would love to see him. Maybe he's not as experienced as George Norton, who went on the last one, I don't think, but he has the same attributes. He has the same ability to break up the game. And if he was in the Northampton shirt, he definitely would. So I hope, for his sake, that he's just going to step up to the next level, because he's well capable of that. I know he had a lot of moments in the Argentina game, which is probably as close to what we're going to see, in terms of intensity. He just threw the ball away a bit too much, but he had the moments. And I think if he can polish them off, he could be a real difference in the game. But I think the one that will go under the radar, that because of our Lions tint and the red and everything else, and ignoring Australia for the most part, but Tom Wright is such a good player. And I think if the Lions get their if you get your kick chase wrong, or if you get your kicking game wrong, not because you're set up wrong, but because you just skew the ball too long or whatever happens, Tom Wright is someone that can just make something from nothing. He just glides through. He's a class player. So you'd like to see, for the test, for the health of the test, you'd love to see him just go through and get a try from nothing, and all of a sudden it's game on,
I think that's one of the areas that Andy Farrell has been big on all tour. When you talk about the effort that's required in that kick battle, in that kick chase battle, but how he spoke about Mac Hansen in that kind of 90-second, 2-second block, 2-minute block where he kicks and then chases and tackles. But that's clearly something that, with the, as you say, Johnny, with the quality of Wright and those guys and what they can do on the kick return, that's an area that is non-negotiable in terms of your work ethic to get into the line, get connected, and try and shut them out there, because that can be like a third set piece for them, that kick return ball. If they get traction, and they get into their kind of flow, because you imagine they're going to have some power plays, Joe Smith power plays up their sleeve anyway. But if they can get some type of parity in that kick battle, and the importance that Joe puts on that as well, that if they can control the air and get some parity on kick return, sorry, get dominance in kick return there with Wright and those guys, that's going to be very, very important for Australia.
Is that an area where you see the Lions being particularly vulnerable, or is that just an Australian strength? And if not, then where would you see the Lions potentially being vulnerable tactically?
Oh, I
Well, I
don't
think
think.
that, yeah, go, Johnny.
Oh, sorry. I just think when you're bringing that many high quality players together, there's no way they're going to be vulnerable. I don't think you're Joe Schmidt looking at them saying, oh, they're vulnerable here, but you're going to have to try and pick something out. You would probably try to get at their connections, probably, and test them in certain areas. And again, another reason why you might go for a certain back row or the centres being a partnership. Because on a kick chase, even, your 12 and 13 have to be together. If the 12 goes off looking for something and the 13 is left isolated, like, they're going to have to be real, like, a lot of trust in there, So they're all things that may sway selections, when, as a public or as someone not involved in the team, you'd be thinking attack, defense, breakdown, maybe. But kick chase and kick battle is a huge part of the modern game. So they could be things that influence some of those decisions around Tom Curry himself. I think maybe it's perception, but Tom Curry moving versus Jack Morgan moving, I'm not sure. Would you be favouring Tom Curry there on a kick chase, and that work ethic? Like, Jack Morgan's really good around the breakdown in the close quarters, but you know, maybe they're seeing something in kick battles that might actually help that back row balance. You know what I mean? So I don't know where they're I don't know where they're going to be actually vulnerable. I suppose with slightly aggressive defenses, you're looking at the kick game itself, short attacking kicks. Ireland are always a bit vulnerable that way, but if you're willing to kick the ball away, you have to get it back, or they just grow taller, you know, and they get more possession. So it's a risk as much as it's an opportunity.
I do think that the area that they've probably struggled with, and it's something that they can actually control themselves, is forcing those offloads. And if they force some of those offloads again, I think Australia are going to kill them in transition. You know, with the athletes they have, with if they can get those, if you know, if they're forcing those offloads like they have done, and it's been a bit of a common theme, like, you know, last weekend was probably their most accomplished performance in that area. But if that, if they do, if the pre if Australia can manage to build a small amount of pressure, and that puts pressure on the line to try and throw a couple of those offloads in that space, that transition area, I think is something that they might be able to get some credit out of. But the Lions have the ability to shut that down, you know. And I
No,
think it,
I don't
you
think they're
know.
going to offload as much. I just think they're going to pare their game back a small bit, I think, and go with a power game. I just reckon they're going to try
Yeah.
and get up the guts of them. It's nearly like the 2017 test against New Zealand, where everyone saw them on New Zealand's width and stuff like that, and they just punched around the ruck and just beat the life out of the Lions. It was actually a really one of those learning moments from a tactical perspective. Just because you
Yeah.
can't, you have to, and they went around the ruck, and it was actually it was a really interesting game plan. I wouldn't think the Lions are going to be going out to show that they can play. I think they'll just go for an absolute test match and overpower that Australian back.
Particularly if the Wallabies are without Will Skelton and Rob
Will
Valentini
Skelton,
as well,
yeah.
like two of their
Yeah.
most powerful forwards. If ever there was a day to just tighten things up ever so slightly and just take on Australia up front and try to beat them up that way, that's the way to do it. A final couple of points on the Lions. A nice, interesting story, and just probably adds to the nice narrative of it, Johnny Holland, I suppose, speaking as an out half, but. Tom Lynagh getting the nod at out half, just 22 years old. It's only his fourth cap. The previous three have all been off the bench. Son of the great Michael Lynagh, who also started tests at out half against the Lions back in 1989. This has the potential to go one of two ways for him. Joe Schmidt did point out, though, that, you know, while he is very inexperienced when it comes to test level, he's playing at Suncorp Stadium. That's where he plays week in, week out for the Queensland Reds. This sort of stuff shouldn't be any different to him. It's probably, you know, it's just another step up in level, really, but the surroundings are all going to be the same. It's just, I suppose there's a nice little kind of circle joining up together about the line for the Lynagh family and what a special day it'll be for them.
Yeah, it's special for them. I think the narrative that Joe Schmidt will spin is that he's well capable, because I'm sure he preferred to have Noah Lolesio playing and someone more experienced. But then again, you could have someone more experienced if he wants to go with James O'Connor, so, you know, or maybe Ben Donaldson. So like he's obviously backing him, and I think you're trying to get a diamond out of that. Like you're trying to, you know, put the pressure on him and hope that he grows. And I think Ireland have been fortunate enough that they've had two out halves that have grown with the pressure or filling big shoes, and let's not get into that, but like they both have, but at the same time they've had the system and the team and the success around them. Australia don't really have that, so yeah, he could massively grow and, you know, put that his name back into that test jersey for a long time if he steps up to the challenge. But as you said, it could very well go the other way, and I think it depends on how his team steps up to the challenge of the Lions, how Josh Schmidt sets them up, and then he's just a cog in the wheel. If he can be a cog in the wheel and get that system running, he'll have a good day. But if he tries too hard, you know, you've seen that plenty of times without halves, and it could the pressure comes on, you get a target from a Lions perspective, and it's a long, long day. So regardless, objectively, if you're the Lions, you're going, there's a kid at out half for them, let's get at that.
Yeah, it kind of plays into what you're saying, Johnny, about just kind of being close, power game around the corner, get out of 10, unsettle them early. And Joe Smith's side's very important, like really like proper terminology from Johnny there, like 10s in Joe Smith's side are cogs, you know, within the system. They're not the system, they're not the wheel, and you know, people know where they need to know where they're supposed to be for a second, third, fourth, sometimes even down to sixth phase, be it left or right. Barrels at breakdowns. So it's just really important, I think, the things in Joe Smith's tens is that he needs to know all the roles for everyone so that he is like that quarterback that's just controlling people where they're going, that's just making sure they know their roles when he calls the calls, and that's his job. He just needs to be that cog in the wheel. But yeah, it is something that if he does get a bit lost, that the Lions can get a lot of traction out of.
To finish up on the Lions, give us a prediction for Saturday.
29-11.
No, there'll be more high scoring than that, will it? I think Lions will score high. I think if it can get, it could be a 30-odd, 20-odd kind of job. But I think the Lions are they're nailed on unless something goes terribly wrong.
Yeah, I think Lions 13 or between 13 to 15 points, I think, spread, is it?
Thereabouts. Yeah. We'll finish up. A very quick word on Ireland 106, Portugal 7. Obviously, given the scoreline, there's not really much point delving too deep into it. But, Johnny, you were in Portugal last week with the Irish camp, in on Friday. What the hell did you say to them? They must have been inspired.
I walked on the pitch for a picture with the Newbridge College lads. That was about it, to be honest. I was standing in a very wet Lisbon for the team run, and I just walked on and grabbed a picture with the three lads. That was about it. But yeah, like, look, it was always a bit of a worry in terms of where Portugal were at, I suppose, when you look at it. Like we were speaking beforehand, you know, the club international side came out and played their Portuguese A, you know, during one of the blocks during the year, and they had a good win. And I think a couple of those lads who played for Portugal A were playing this weekend. They're very much, I didn't get to see Simon Mannix, actually. I had left by the time they'd come in to do their team run, unfortunately. But you heard what Paulie said after the game, that, you know, they're very much in a transition period, and it must be very difficult for, you know, a side like Portugal to go through transition when it's very much an amateur game. But I think in terms of Ireland, the 2 weeks was definitely a worthwhile exercise for them. You look at the guys, that have got capped and the experience that they've got and the knowledge they've gained over the couple of weeks in terms of what's required at that, you know, he looks at the likes of, you know, Tommy O'Brien, Thomas O'Hearn, you know, just to name check it, two guys that have been real, you know, Thomas O'Hearn has been struck with injury a bit, but he was always one of those leading, like those new style sixes that can really cause a shed load of damage out in the wider channel. Great for him, something that he can bounce into the next season with. Tommy O'Brien deserved it. He's been class this year. And then two other guys I think that notable mention for Shane Bolton. I think his profile is something we probably don't have a lot in, you know, in Ireland, in terms of his size profile, his speed, his aggressive nature. And then Ben Murphy, I think, has been class all year for Connacht, and nice for those lads. But you know, whatever about last weekend, I think the big thing was getting a fairly comprehensive win in Georgia. I think that was the one. You know, talking to a few guys, a few of the Exeter lads, I think Cockers was really, really disappointed with that result in terms of their opportunity to really beat the drum about the promotion and relegation into the Six Nations. And yeah, I think look, it's been a really worthwhile exercise. And from a coaching perspective, great to see, you know, Prendy and Leams, you know, who've come up through the ranks and get an opportunity with Wash at the top level. So yeah, worthwhile couple of weeks. But yeah, I had nothing to do with last week. I literally got a picture. That was it. I was off the pitch while getting absolutely soaked in Lisbon, which I didn't expect. I didn't even have a jumper with me, never mind a jacket.
But Johnny Holland, overall worthwhile experience those couple of weeks for the team. Like, obviously you're not really getting much out of that match itself against Portugal, but is the probably between 3 and 4 weeks they probably had in camp together as a group, Is that where the real value is coming for Andy Farrell this time next year?
Unfortunately, that is what they're going to get out of it because Portugal get them nothing. Like, and I watched on TV with, obviously things are busy and the Lions are on, so I tried to watch as much as I could, and I was like, am I going to spend my time watching this when there's not even a physical contact? Shane Bolton, as well as he did, like he just, shrugged off a winger and cantered in, and you can't even build phase play. It was quite frustrating to watch. You'd be disappointed with Portugal, and the guy, Portugal were so impressive at the last World Cup. You'd wonder what they've done with their structures and their transition. I think transition is a failure in a country like Portugal. Fair enough, you're going to transition harder than in Ireland, for example. But you have to see it coming. Like, there's clubs all over the country here that you could say they'll transition, but they don't transition. So, like, I'd be disappointed what they've put out. I'm sure Ireland, if they got to pick their opponents again, they wouldn't be picking Portugal. Like, you can't say that that was the most worthwhile exercise, but what you will get out of it is time together, looking at, giving fellas a less pressurized debut and things like that. I think Craig Casey getting into a leadership role, the way he did, is probably a huge positive, because there's no doubt, like, Gibson Park is at the top of his game, but how far away is Craig Casey from him? Like, it's really adding competition to what he's coming back into. So there don't get me wrong, there's loads of positives from the tour itself, but Portugal's not one of them.
No, certainly not. Listen, the two Johnnies, thanks a million for joining us this week on the podcast, and we'll speak to you again soon. Loads of coverage, obviously, coming up over the next few days on RT Online. I'll be bringing plenty of preview material, live coverage on the day. We've live blogs, reports, post-match reaction, and we'll have another podcast next week as well. Looking back on the first test and looking ahead to the second test in Melbourne. Speak to you again soon.